levels of our government who are unelected. That needs to be stopped, and we hope that the courts will step in to put an end to this unprecedented mixture of private and public power and abuse of executive authority.
Carla Gilbride, before we end, can you describe what happened last week when you and two EEOC commissioners were fired? What happened? What time was it?
So I received the email at around 10:30 p.m. telling me that, again, citing this sort of unbounded authority that the president has to have people that agree with him ideologically serving in his administration, that my services were no longer required. And the email also referred to, again, this concept of gender ideology, this idea that the president wanted to be able to enforce the sex binary, even though, as I mentioned, that's contrary to Supreme Court precedent. And there was also a reference in the email to diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is, as I'm sure your listeners are aware, has just become sort of a boogeyman and a concept that is being used to tar all sorts of efforts, including the efforts of the EEOC to enforce the civil rights laws, which is what I was doing as general counsel, was overseeing litigation to enforce civil rights laws that have been on the books for 30, in some cases, 60 years.
Carla Gilbride, I want to thank you for being with us. Just fired by Trump as general counsel of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, will Trump take action on his executive order to turn Guantanamo Bay Naval Base into a giant prison camp for 30,000 brown and black people? Also, we'll get a special report from L.A. on the fires this time, what's going on down there. And we'll talk to high school students in Northern California who did not attend school today in response to the national call for a day without immigrants. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We're coming to you every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. We are in San Francisco today, and we are really happy to have you along on Free Speech Radio. We begin with, will Trump keep his promise? He's kept a lot of them already. Will he keep his promise to create a prison camp, perhaps a concentration camp on Guantanamo Bay for all the people, brown and black people he considers dangerous? Joining us and helping us keep track of what's going on here is Camilo Perez Bustillo. He is an incredible person on this, on the front, and keeping an eye out. He is part of the leadership of Witness at the Border and a coordinator of the National Lawyers Guild Task Force on the Americas. You've been writing about this and you've been warning about this. Please, Camilo, we're grateful to have you with us. Take us up to speed. Give us your sense. Is this real? And how real is it in terms of this potential prison camp?
Thanks, Dennis. You know, again, it's an honor to be here, and it's really difficult to ride the wave of everything that's coming at us. But I think somehow we have to like focus on what's really at the core of what's going on. I think there are two layers to this. When we think about that potential detention camp at Guantanamo, this is something that came from Trump as an initiative. It's not something we're simply imagining or worrying about, you know, at the fringes of our vision. This is something that he has seriously proposed. Whether he actually follows through or not, you know, I mean, it could be like the border wall. It could be another, or like, you know, taking back the Panama Canal. It could be an imperial fantasy, as Greg Grandin has described it, you know, the great radical historian based at Yale. We don't know, but it's the same thing as the massive deportations in the U.S. We have to be prepared as if the worst might happen. And what we know is that there are concrete plans in place and that there are military units being mobilized as we speak. We've already seen some direct reports of that to create the infrastructure that's needed at Guantanamo on occupied Cuban territory to create space for 30,000 migrants who are going to be labeled as criminal aliens and who are going to be denied any semblance of due process. Now, there's not much due process in any case for anybody who's being deported, because all of those processes are being sped up precisely to avoid scrutiny and to avoid due process. But it's even worse if they're being sent to Guantanamo, both because of what we know about what Guantanamo represents in the world and in the history of human rights as a regression, you know, a torture center officially and openly established and operated by the U.S. government against those supposedly, allegedly involved with 9/11 or with similar movements. That on the one hand, and on the other hand, going all the way back to the 1980s and particularly the 1990s under Clinton, under a Democratic administration, when as many as 18,000 migrants were held at Guantanamo at a parallel facility to what eventually became the torture center. So we know both like the historical origins of using Guantanamo in this way, and all we have to do is connect the dots. The other thing to be clear about is Marco Rubio's current trip as the newly appointed viceroy for Latin America. He's on the ground in his domain exerting his power. It's now Marco Rubio's big stick. And he's primarily visiting the current or potential allies or weakest links in Latin America that can most easily be dominated and compelled to roll over, because meanwhile, there's an emerging front of resistance led initially by Colombia, then joined by President Sheinbaum, who's pushed back very strongly in the last few days against the threatened tariffs, and who has managed to buy 30 days, a 30-day suspension of the tariffs, so there can be negotiations. That's the good news. The bad news is that Mexico may cut a deal in order to stave off the impact of the threatened tariffs, a deal that will deeply threaten and undermine the rights of migrants, not just from other countries who transit through Mexico, but Mexican migrants who are leaving a country that is meanwhile falling apart because of internal violence, driven, of course, by the U.S. arms trade.
All right, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Camilo Perez Bustillo. We've been talking about this project that Trump has been articulating, and he's been pretty consistent in terms of keeping his promises of things that he's trying to accomplish. And one of them may very well be this massive prison camp on Guantanamo Bay, which could turn it easily into a concentration camp. It's also, is it silly to think, is it paranoid to think that it also could be part of a strategy in terms of dealing with Cuba from a Trumpian perspective and how he might like to deal with Cuba?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so if Guantanamo's on the table, that means Cuba's on the table as well. And if the Panama Canal is on the table, that means Panama as a sovereign state is on the table, ready for the carving. And when we talk about the economic warfare against Mexico, of course, that's what the U.S. has been conducting, economic and political warfare against Cuba since the Cuban Revolution. You know, that's what the Cuban Revolution has been able to navigate and survive up until now. But under Trump 2.0, reloaded, Cuba is more vulnerable than ever, is more of a target than ever before. And from Marco Rubio's perspective, this is what we've been trying to like really underline and emphasize, is from his perspective, the regimes currently in power in Mexico, in Colombia, in Cuba, in Venezuela, in Nicaragua, they're all part of the same gang from his perspective, from Rubio's perspective, and from Trump's perspective. This is essentially a regime change agenda. Let's remember, all the talk about regime change under Bush Jr., right? You know, in the wake of 9/11, Iraq and Afghanistan and so on, and then eventually Syria. That's what we're facing in Latin America. So it's a continental threat to the sovereignty of the peoples of Latin America. And when we talk about tariffs in the context of Mexico, what we're talking about is economic warfare, just like the sanctions that have been conducted against Cuba for 60 years. It's the same methodology of terror inflicted by an empire trying to hang on to the shreds of the power it once had in our region, and that it has lost over the last 20 years.
How, in terms of Trump pushing the envelope, in terms of sweeps domestically, policy that he will carry out consistent with Rubio's imperial romance,
right,
with his own power. How does this look now? Is it worse than it was with Biden? Is he setting in place structures that will make it worse? Is it worse yet? There's a lot more fear, I can tell you that.
Yes, absolutely. It is already worse, and it hasn't even yet fully begun. So I think just like the Guantanamo camp isn't open yet, but they're getting it ready, and just like the mass raids have not yet taken place on the scale we feared, but what's been done is to sow terror in our communities because we know they're coming. You know, we talked about this before. California, Bakersfield, at this point, is still the largest single raid. I mean, there have been numbers that are going up, and there's a quota that's been increased. And, you know, you and I were talking about that last week. And so, you know, the threshold is getting higher and higher. The damage is intensifying that's on the horizon, but it hasn't hit yet. So that's why we need to prepare. We need to prepare for the worst. That's what's happening through the rapid response networks throughout the country. That's what's happening through the kind of pushback we saw today in A Day Without Immigrants in several key sectors and regions of the country. We've seen the pushback among youth and the high schools. We've also seen the ways in which people are keeping their kids at home and not showing up for appointments at the health center. And you know, we've heard the kinds of reports that indicate, you know, what the meme is that has been seen on social media is that somewhere in the U.S. there's a Latina Anne Frank hiding in an attic somewhere. And that's a reality. It's not an exaggeration anymore. It describes this concrete historical moment, and it gives us a sense of the dimensions of the challenge we face. When we say Guantanamo may hold, that's what they're saying, may hold as many as 30,000 migrants, if that in fact unfolds, it will be the largest concentration camp in history, larger than those of the Nazi regime. Now, we're not talking about the exactly same methodology, of course, not yet. But what we are talking about is the same kind of machinery.
Really? And really creating a structure where you don't have to have facts, you just have to have the microphone. And at this point, there's a lot of power in the hands of a very few. I'm wondering how you're thinking about it. I mean, we are watching the emerging corporal fascist state. There, you know, there is a lot of power in a very few hands. What do you think about that? Are you concerned that we're going up the wrong street at a very at an accelerating pace?
I mean, what I think is this, is that we have a huge dilemma. Those of us who are lawyers, who are law professors, who are, you know, human rights advocates, defenders, you know, scholars like Francis Boyle, who we should, you know, honor, and his memory and his legacy, you know, those who've been fighting for human rights on the front lines, I think we're all, you know, experiencing a dilemma, which is, we have worked as if the rule of law matters, as if there were a bright red line that would not be crossed because we would be able to push back. That's been true up until now. It was true during the first Trump administration. But even then, there was nothing we could do in practice. Despite all of the litigation, outrage, and protest, there were at least 5,000 children ripped away from their families, and there are hundreds or thousands of those who have still not been reunited. That damage was done, despite everything. Everybody knows in the summer of 2018 that families were being separated, and everybody heard the tape of the children crying and being, you know, insulted and humiliated by the guards in the improvised detention camps. We all heard that or heard about it, but we were not, in fact, able to stop it or prevent it. Let me put it that way. We were not able to prevent it. We were able to bring it to an end. That can happen again. You know, Primo Levi, the Italian writer who survived Auschwitz and wrote extensively about the Holocaust, his summary lesson when he was asked, what did you learn? You know, you survived the Holocaust. He said, if it happened once, it can happen again. That's what we need to understand and how we need to prepare.
And of course, it includes us understanding that what is going on in Gaza and the way in which it's funded in terms of the genocide has everything to do with what's going on now and Trump's empowerment to do as he pleases.
And you know, Dennis, I think, you know, the banners we need to begin to see, you know, we've seen the ones about, you know, from Gaza to the border wall, you know, all the walls have got to go, you know, et cetera. And that's really important. But it's like from Gaza to Guantanamo. That's the banner we need to see. Because in effect, Guantanamo is going to reproduce the methodology of terror that has been unleashed on the Palestinian people of Gaza. I mean, it's the same machinery again. And again, you know, the scale may not be the same. Let's hope that there are not bombs raining down on the Cuban people like they did in Gaza. But there's nothing to prevent that. In other words, unless we activate our consciences, our bodies, and our organizations.
All right. Listen. Please keep us posted. We appreciate that you take the time and that you've really been a wonderful teacher for the community to understand sort of some of what's going on the ground and also a lot about the bigger picture. And we have to be thinking in very broad terms here now. Thank you, Camila Perez-Pastillo. Thank you, as always, for the important information. Come back whenever the moment is right. The door is always open.
Thank you, Dennis, for your essential work. And to all of us who are listening, we need to be awake to this moment, and we need to respond and rise to the response that's needed. Thank you.
Thank you. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a break. We will be back. To Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We are grateful to have back with us Gary Baca of KPFK, reporter there, producer, longtime producer here in the Bay Area, of course, with La Onda Bajita and all kinds of wonderful stuff. And we, Gary, are very happy to have you back with us. We wanted to sort of drop down there and get a sense of what's going on in the aftermath. What are some of the things that people may be facing, things might be going on that we're not hearing about if we're outside the loop but should know about? So what's happening? Are the fires still burning? Is there an effective containment?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is an effective containment, and I think communities are now in the process of rebuilding. Habitat for Humanity is stepping up, and a lot of people are organizing together. There's also numerous foundations that are helping musicians get back on their feet. If you lost an instrument, if you lost your studio, there's about a $12 million set aside for that. But we had a recent rain that lasted for 3 days and seems to have brought the fires down just for the moment. But as you know, the winds are terrible out here, and one can spring up at any time. So The Palisades fire, they're still working on that, but the most of the other fires that are happening throughout the counties are kind of diminished now, and they're just in the process of rebuilding. But yes, we talked about what happened last night and the night before. Last night, thousands of Latinos descended on Los Angeles Street for an anti-ICE protest, blocked the surface streets on Los Angeles Street and the 101 freeway. This happened around 6 o'clock during the Grammys. So this was something that put a halt to traffic going back and forth through Hollywood and downtown. It was a peaceful protest, but when crowds were told to disperse, the police pepper sprayed them and threw out the tear gas. So this is something that was not expected. A lot of people didn't think that the police would go that far. But there was also a huge protest in Riverside. The numbers were out. As you know, Los Angeles Latinos make up about 48% of the population. So L.A. has the largest Latino population of any county in California. So the hemp is showing up without a doubt. So I was out there. We've seen folks with signs like "No human is illegal," "Abolish ICE," "Brown skin is not the probable cause." Other signs said, "Don't bite the hand that feeds you," referring to the farm workers in the fields. "Fight ignorance, not immigrants." "Immigrants, America's ghostwriters." And one that touched me was "Born from dreams that crossed the borders." So people are out in numbers. The protest is full of passion, Dennis. It's full of heart. It's a nonviolent protest. You know, people are showing up in different cities, as you know, such as Atlanta, Indianapolis, St. Louis. But the one in L.A. Was very peaceful. And, you know, people came out for the support of immigrants trying to make a living. Some of us can justify the murders, the felons getting deported. But for ICE to go into schools, businesses, people are upset. So L.A. is not having this. This policy that's happening to families, that's why they showed up in numbers, to show the Trump administration, the government, to let the mayor's office know, the governor's office know, any elected official out here, that Los Angeles will remain a sanctuary city. So it was well organized, except for the drivers in the 101. That was a mess. But, yeah, that was going on. And so it really has the city divided, you know, with Trumpsters saying deport them all. A lot of tension going on right here in LA. So, you know, I would like to see the maggots picking lettuce in the fields, you know, to see how that works out for them. But for all
and who's going to there's going to be this great suffering. Many people have lost a great deal. Who's going to rebuild these beautiful mansions and all these other houses if you deport everybody who would be doing the work there? It's an odd thought.
I'm also thinking that, you know, folks are going to buy up real estate, and who knows who's going to run it now and who's going to have that area. But, yeah, you know, it's part of the rebuilding. And, you know, a lot of construction. We're talking about restaurant businesses. We're talking about agriculture. So that's right. You know, people are going to feel that absence of workers. And it's just going to take, if you think it took long to build a house with a general contractor, think about it if you don't have any workers. So it'll take some businesses out. I know that much.
Back to the Grammys. First of all, I have to ask you, was there at least one star who came out and locked arms with the people?
Not that I know. I haven't got that information. But I know that there was one artist, rap artist, that mentioned something about what's going on in the streets at that time. I guess she got a text or something on her Instagram. I'm not too sure what rap artist, female, she spoke a little bit about that. So, you know, when we talk about all the different areas and cities surrounding, it's going to be obvious that this is a problem. And it's going to be for the administration, for Trump administration and the governor's office. And they know that, you know, this is a sanctuary city. Like I said, you know, immigrants are not the problem. They are part of the restaurant, agriculture, and construction businesses. This is going to be a major part of the labor force that will be affected. They bring profits to the industry, and when you start losing money, there's a problem. So I think people will work their way around this, but, you know, it's just sad that they're going into the schools and going into homes and taking out grandma and grandpa, and instead of, you know, getting these folks that are committing hard crimes, murder, and all that. So folks are upset. They're blowing horns, waving the Mexico flag, fireworks, blocking streets and freeways. So this is going to be ongoing, continuing until we see ICE abolished.
Amazing. And Gary, first of all, we really appreciate you taking the time out. Gary Baca from our sister station, KPFK, long history working here at KPFA, working with Pacifica, wonderful producer. We appreciate you taking the time out. What do you think comes next on the ground? Do you think there can be some peace, some real support between the communities so that something reasonable could happen? It's beautiful that people are out in the street and that they're allowed, but where do you think this might come if, in fact, there was a positive sign?
Well, Dennis, I'm hoping for a peaceful protest, and I'm hoping that administration gets to see what's going on in the streets, the mayor's office, Mayor Bass, and Governor Newsom. But when we talk about it, I mean, we certainly don't want martial law out here. We don't want the army. We don't want, you know, border patrol agents all over this county of Los Angeles. That's what we don't want. And I just think it's going to be mayhem if this happens. So if the powers that be here in Los Angeles are not listening to the people on the streets and reading the signs and talking to community members, it's going to get out of control because people are just not having it, especially in Los Angeles. So it could turn either way. And it could turn, like I said, last night, they brought in the tear gas. They even came in horses. So
really? They're horses?
For five. Yeah, they came in on horses. So, as well as their cars, they had helicopters. It was insane. So, it could turn bad, but I'm just hoping that because people are not standing for it. People are just not having it, and it's just you know, families are being affected, and the, like I say, businesses are. So, you know, somehow the people are going to get together and want to, I guess, come up to with a. With the conclusion of what they're going to do. I think that Trump really needs to think about what he's doing, because this is not the only city. We're talking about Oakland, San Francisco, San Jose, Los Angeles, Fresno. We're talking about all the major cities here in California, throughout the country, Chicago. All these places are standing up and they're coming out in numbers. And so I think that's what's great about it, that we're all in solidarity with each other. And that we're all thinking of the same thing, because he's got a bunch of crazy policies. But this one seems to hit home. This is the one that says, you're not taking my cousin, you're not taking my mom, you're not taking my wife, you're not taking my kids, or, you know, or we're not all going together. Or we're not going to be separated. You know, it's something that people just don't want. They knew what he did during his last 4 years, and they're not going for it for another 4 years. And they're letting them know right in the beginning. He's only been in office, you know, a month or so. Well, hey, you know, and he decided he wanted to do this in the very beginning. Well, the people are ready for him, you know. So I think that's where it's at right now.
Listen, really appreciate the good information. And listen, you should do the Baca report on Flashpoints. We'd love to have you. The information is crucial. So you've been summoned. Thank you for taking the time out, Gary. Stay safe. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. And keep up the good work there in Berkeley. And I'll be looking forward to the next time we talk.
All right. Talk to you soon. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to go north here in California on the West Coast, all the way north. And we're going to hear about a day without immigrants. Some students decided they wanted to make a protest. And we're going to hear about that. And it's important. Stay with us. Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, your daily investigative news magazine. We come to you every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. This is Free Speech, KPFA in the San Francisco Bay Area, coming to you wherever you are in this world. We turn our attention, as I say, we're going from south in California up north. We're joined by an old friend of this show, Renee Salcedo. She's program director at Almas Libres Reyes Collective, and she advocates for people who do some of the hardest work in this country and oftentimes don't get what they deserve, and they get a lot more sometimes than they deserve in being mistreated. Renee Salcedo stands up for the people. Renee, but this is an interesting day for you. It's called A Day Without Immigrants, and we're joined by you and also by two students who decided not to go to school today. So why don't you set it up for us and then introduce us to our guests.
Absolutely, Dennis. Well, today was a monumental day, not only here in Sonoma County, but in many other parts in the country. It was a day without immigrants, and there was a call out for people to not go to work, not go to school, not purchase anything at the stores, to protest the deportations that are continuing under the Trump administration. And here in Sonoma County, our Latinx immigrant population is about one third of the county, and many of them are young people, students, high school students. And young people are just outraged by the attacks against them, against their parents, against their extended families. So today at Rancho Cataldi High School, we had a group of at least 50 students not go to school, and many of them notified the school why they weren't going, and they attended the very large protest in Santa Rosa. Over 500 people showed up, and most of them young people. So thank goodness the youth are here to lead us through this time of resistance, and I am honored to introduce Elizabeth and Brian, who are co-chairs of the Rancho Cotati High School Mecha Club. Elizabeth, you want to go ahead and start and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided not to go to school today and participate in the Day Without Immigrants.
Yeah, okay, so I'm Elizabeth Reyes, one of the co-presidents at Rancho Cotati High School of the Club Mecha. It's also known as the Latino Student Union Club. And, you know, I grew up in a Mexican household, so, you know, all my life I have been very close with my family, whether it's, you know, my intermediate family, like my parents, or, you know, aunts, uncles, grandparents. And, you know, this is a topic that really touches all of us, you know, not even just all the Mexicans, you know, this goes for Salvadorians, people that come from Guatemala, because as a Latino community, we're all very close. And I think that this certain topic is just very fragile for a lot of us because, you know, it's scary because our families could be torn apart, like whether we want it to happen or not. But due to all these new laws, all these immigration problems that we have been facing, you know, we don't know what could truly happen.
Brian, would you like to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about why you participated today in a Day Without Immigrants?
Yeah, so my name is Brian Molina, and I'm the other co-president of the Mecha and Latino Student Union at Rancho Cotati High School. And I participated in this protest and participated in the one in Santa Rosa because and during these times of uncertainty, I wanted to tell the Latino community that we have to be united and we shouldn't be scared. My parents suffered a lot trying to make it to this country just to give me and my siblings a good future and to set us up for success. And like that happens to every other immigrant family too. And I just wanted to be aware that this isn't right, what's happening, that the backbone of this country is immigrants. This country is we're all immigrants here. No one is just like the only people that aren't immigrants is the Native Americans. And I just want that to be known that we're the backbone of this country.
You know, it's really, this is Dennis here. Thank you both for coming and joining us today and talking about why you decided not to go to school today. Brian, just used the phrase I believe I heard you say this time of uncertainty. Would you both talk about that say more about what that uncertainty means in real terms? Paint us a picture of how that manifests.
Well, I use that phrase because a lot of immigrant families are living in fear. They're fearful that they any day they can just get taken away from ripped from their families. And sometimes they won't be able to see them again, like getting sent back to Mexico or other countries. And I just want the community to be more united as a community, more like strong, because these events are what make communities even stronger and prosper.
And what about you, Elizabeth? This notion of uncertainty, what does that mean in the daily life of you or your friends, or how does this affect the way you think about life?
I would just want to like add on to what Brian said, you know, like he had phrased, us families here, we don't know when they could be potentially torn apart. And it's scary because like you also mentioned, you know, it's friends, it's all these family members. I would say that many, if not all, people that come and travel here, it's just to give our families a better life. You know, us, a lot of parents that came from Mexico, they don't have all the luxuries that we do here. And the reason for them coming here is, you know, just to build us a better life. They want to see us pursue our dreams, you know, go to college and have all these new opportunities that they weren't granted with. So it's scary because they come here to work for our future. So I think now as the youth, we need to do that same exact thing and show up for them, show them that we're here to support them no matter what. And we have the opportunity to use our voices, so they should be known. And like you said, you know, we did attend the protest today in Santa Rosa, and it was great. You know, I had never felt so proud of my culture because they're there supporting each other, whether it's young kids, you know. I saw people of all ages there. I saw not just Mexican people. There was everybody that was truly showing up for us. And it just shows that as a community, we make such a big, we could, like, we have that advantage to make a change, you know, because just one person is not going to be seen or heard as much as a whole group of people.
Beautiful. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We're talking to a couple of students, students who decided to stay out of school today in honor of a very special day, a day without immigrants, to call attention to the suffering and the great work and the importance that so many people who get so... So many people do that and are really not given the rights and what they deserve. This is a struggle, and now things have become a little bit tougher. Renee, I understand you sort of did this with your son. Was this a family decision to stay out of school?
Well, no. Actually, he approached me and he said, I'd like to skip school on February 3rd to respect the boycott. And I asked him, well, how many students do you think are going to be walking out? And then I contacted Elizabeth and Brian, and it seemed like, you know, there were going to be a significant number. And then I heard from comrades that other students from other schools here in our county were going to do the same thing. So I just put my organizer hat on and thought, well, we need to share this with the world through the media, through friends like Dennis Bernstein and Miguel Molina. And so I said, okay, if you want to skip school, let's really do this. And the students have been amazing, so powerful, you know, talking to the media and telling the world why Trump's deportations are immoral, how young people are being impacted, and you know, this is impacting young people not only in Sonoma County, of course, students in Santa Clara County and San Jose walked out recently and joined a huge march after there were some raids and deportations there. Bakersfield, young people walked out of their schools. It's so important for us to support the youth's leadership and their vision, because many of them are representing their families. And they do a much better job than I do, that's for sure.
Is there a noticeable difference now between what's going on with Trump and Biden? What are the changes? Is it atmospheric pressure? Is it real? How is that perceived now?
Well, you know, as we all know, Obama deported more people than Trump did during his last presidency. Obama, unfortunately, and other Democrats like Bill Clinton deported millions of people during their administrations. I think that, so it's not really a matter of Trump versus everyone else, because everyone else has also terrorized the migrant community and used this as, you know, for political expediency. The main difference, I think, is the rhetoric and the show that's being performed. You know, you see on the news how there are these, they're almost staged raids, and with, you know, newly appointed federal officials there, and they're saying, here, see, we're doing it, we're going after the illegal immigrants, the criminals. And so I think that whenever there is that level of, you know, anti-immigrant hatred and the threats of ICE being in our neighborhoods, I think that that causes people to not want to leave their homes. You know, I get calls from people, is it safe for me to leave my house? I get calls from high school students, is it safe for me to go to school? I have an exam today. My mom thinks I should stay home. So I guess that's how I would differentiate it. And of course, yeah, there's just a lot more racial hatred being spewed. And there are, I guess, the few policy differences are that Trump, as we've all heard, has announced that raids or arrests may happen in formerly so-called safe spaces, churches, hospitals, schools, and that has changed too. The ICE agents, we've been hearing reports that they are going into schools in places like Chicago and in schools in places like Colorado. I don't think it has happened here in California. I think I would have heard about it. But so there is a level of wanting to terrorize the undocumented community into submission. Perhaps they think that it will cause people to go back to their home countries, which of course is ridiculous because, as Elizabeth and Brian eloquently tell us, you know, people are here simply to escape persecution or to better their lives. And if you have to put food on the table for your children, and that means migrating, you're going to migrate.
I'm wondering, before we let you all go, I'd love to hear from Brian and Elizabeth. Do these issues come up among young people? Do you all talk about the things about your fears? Do you do more? Do you spend some time together? Have you created structures to deal with what might come if the current president has his way? Maybe start, Elizabeth.
I personally, you know, I have tried to obviously make my input, starting with today, you know, participating in this protest to, you know, show that I'm here supporting everybody. But I think it's going to take a lot bigger of a group than, you know, the few of us that showed out from our school today. But I definitely think that that is something that we should do. Because, like I previously said, you know, as a bigger group, we could make more of a difference. Because obviously one person could say a lot of stuff, but the voice won't be as heard as if there were a lot more than us. And that way, you know, I know that a lot of us at our school, you know, whether it's us that, you know, are here undocumented or our fellow family members, we're all facing that same fear. Because, you know, like I said, sometimes it's our family, sometimes it's our friends, but we're all a community, and slowly, obviously, the less people we have here, it's just not going to feel the same, and all of us as a whole create what this great community is, you know. A majority of us here happen to be Latinos and Latinas, but we're just here, you know, trying to do good for ourselves.
Well, and Brian, final words about the way in which you handle these things that are coming up. And
yeah, I've tried to recruit, and so in our club, it's all about cultural awareness and political awareness and like furthering education. And I've tried recruiting a lot of people in my school because we want to focus more on, because obviously we're, our age is around 17, we're turning 18, we're going to be the future of the society. So I want to tell them, like new people that join our club, that these stuff affect us. And even if you don't think they'll affect us directly, that they eventually will affect you. And I just, we're trying to make our club more involved in protests and just be more aware of what's happening in our country, because it will eventually affect you.
All right. And final word, Renee?
Well, I think that, you know, the rest of us should support the young people and their leadership in this resistance that we are in the midst of right now. You know, support them by supporting their organizations like the Mechas and attending their mobilizations. The main reason why the DACA youth were able to win so much support is because they organized amongst themselves and they implemented really, you know, aggressive organizing strategies, had sit-ins and did civil disobedience, like the yes. takeover of the bridge in LA recently. So let's follow the leadership of the youth in this resistance that we're in the midst of.
I love it. Thank you all for being with us on Flashpoints and sharing honest thoughts and giving us good information. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon. Please stay safe.
Thank you, Dennis.
And you're so welcome. You're unbelievably welcome. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Short musical break, and then we're going to remember Francis Boyle. We lost him just a day or two ago. Stay with us. I was so sorry to hear the news of the passing of radical attorney Francis Boyle. Francis Boyle was a regular contributor to our nationally syndicated Flashpoint show here on Pacifica Radio and a real force to be reckoned with. He was generous with his time and brilliant in his analysis on Palestine and Bosnia and so much more. He was held in high esteem by many of our listeners around the world. He will be sorely missed, and I'm sure I'd be calling him today, right now maybe, if he was still with us, to see if he could spare a few minutes to help us untangle the meaning and evil of the latest genocide somewhere in this troubled world. He will be deeply missed. Francis will be deeply missed. He was a radical voice, unrestrained and unbent. Oh my God, he will be missed. Francis Boyle Presente, with love and sympathy. Dennis Bernstein for the Flashpoints team. Francis, take it. Let's talk about international law. First of all, can we start with Lebanon? Is what Israel is doing with U.S. weaponry, bombing the hell out of a civilian population in Lebanon, is that legal? Do they have the right to do that? Or is that a war crime?
Well, thanks for having me on, Dennis. My best to your listening audience. Well, of course, it's a war crime, but it's now verging on genocide. It appears that Israel is applying the same strategy to Lebanon that it has applied to Gaza, and the International Court of Justice has already issued three orders of provisional measures of protection on behalf of the Palestinians in Gaza against Israel. So what can I say? If you look at the victims here, Shia Muslims, and now they're bombing Christian areas as well. Religion is a protected category under the Genocide Convention. So it's getting to that point, Dennis.
Well, they also attacked UN UNIFIL forces in Lebanon. The United States is also a part of UN forces in Haiti. It seems in Haiti they have a problem. They're attacking the people who are shooting at the UN forces. But here in Lebanon, it seems like they're arming those folks who are opening fire on UN troops. Is there a special part of international law that prevents, say, the United States, Israel, using U.S. weapons to shoot on UN forces?
Right. UN forces are, peacekeepers are especially protected under the laws of war, and attacking them is a war crime. But Israel did the exact same thing in its 1982 invasion of Lebanon. They attacked UN forces, and the United States government did not impose any penalties at all on them. It does seem to me what they want to do is terrorize and intimidate the 10,000 UN forces there south of the Litani River, which, as we've discussed before, I think is their ultimate objective here. This is Lebensraum, breathing room, the greater Israel. They've always coveted the Litani River, and it does seem to me that is their objective here.
And is the U.S. technically responsible because of their willingness to arm with these massive weapons of destruction? Or is there a legitimate way, or is there at least structures to hold the U.S. accountable for arming war criminals?
Yes, clearly we are aiding and abetting Israeli crimes in Gaza, the West Bank, and now Lebanon for sure, and also their indiscriminate attacks on the Houthi population there in Yemen, and likewise in Syria. Holding the U.S. government accountable, is a difficult problem. That's really up to us, the American people, the United States government.
Hey, everybody, it's Greg McVicar, creator of Undercurrents. Glad you're listening. This is KBOO 90.7, Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners, join us at the station on February 7th from 6 to